Are you tired of the 9-to-5 lifestyle? Do you want more freedom to do what you want, when you want it, without sacrificing your current income? Then this is the show for you. Every week, we dive into John's journey towards financial freedom and everything he has learned since 2014. Real estate investing, cryptocurrency, stocks, private lending, foreign residency, tax saving strategies, infinite banking, assets protection, and much more. Now, here is your host, the founder of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus, John Rickgarn.
Hey, Happy New Year. This is the very first episode released of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus as we start off a great new year here in 2022. I hope 2021 was great for all of you. And for those that have joined me from the beginning, thanks for joining again. And I hope you continue to pick a little nuggets here and there that help you on your journey to wealth and freedom. And also, if this is the first time that you're joining in, be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Now, before we start off, perhaps you're a real estate investor like me, where I started about 5 years ago. And one of the great things about real estate investing is utilizing depreciation. I'll just utilize very high level. You get $120,000 property, $100,000 of that you can depreciate over 27 and a half years, comes to about $3,600 a year or $300 a month, which you can use to offset your income from the rental property. So hypothetically, you get $300 net cash flow. There's $300 depreciation. Sorry, Uncle Sam, they're not getting any part of that in taxes. So you get $300 a month tax-free. But with that, there might be some opportunities for additional depreciation or additional tax write-offs. Maybe you're in a situation that you have a large tax bill. Is $300 a month too little for your tax situation? Is 27 and a half years a little too slow for you? 27 and a half years from now I'm going to be an old man. So maybe you want some of that money sooner rather than later, as a dollar today is worth a lot more than it will be in the future, especially with the Fed printing as much money as they are. So I've talked enough now. Today, I am honored to have on Yona Weiss of Madison Specs, and who is also the host of the popular Weiss Advice podcast. Now, Yona refers to himself as the cost seg king. Personally, I prefer to call him the Lord of the LinkedIn, just with all the connections he has and how many people he knows and how many he follows. It's just, mind-boggling to say the least. Yona has saved property owners millions of dollars in taxes over the years through a section in the tax code called cost segregation, hence the cost seg king I referred to earlier. Now, I felt this was a very interesting topic to cover, and I myself wanted to learn more about this as well. So with that, Yona, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, John. It is a pleasure to be here, and I've never been called the Lord of the LinkedIn before, but it is quite fitting, something that I take a little bit of pride in. The platform that has helped me the most, I think, in terms of networking and growing our business over the past several years. And I try to give back as much as possible. So in that regard, I think that's probably an accurate description. And but it's great to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Yona. And now maybe we can start off before we dive into cost segregation. Maybe you can just give my listeners a quick background on yourself, maybe who aren't familiar with you, and then what you do with Madison Specs.
Absolutely. I mean, a little bit about me. There's not too much to know. I mean, I guess I'm a pretty interesting person when it comes to life outside LinkedIn, but I'm a father, six children, a beautiful family, wife, and I love giving back. Really, that's my passion. And I was a teacher for many years, about 15 years or so, until I found real estate about 5-6 years ago. And real estate has really been an outlet that I was kind of looking for in terms of, number one, a way to create more wealth, to be, another profession, to the teaching profession doesn't pay that much. Sure. And I was really shocked almost to find such an incredible community of people in the real estate investing world. There may be some people out there that are not the most honest and straightforward people. And that's with people in every business. But I find that real estate, especially multifamily and this kind of online community that's out there, is a lot of people who are very growth oriented type people. And so I relate to that so much. And, so I found this company, Madison Commercial Real Estate Services. Madison Specs is one of the branches of that company that is the largest national cost segregation company. I found them about a little over four years ago or so. And we just fit. I just clicked with the people there and the, what they were trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish. And I use my teaching background really to allow me to just educate people about this subject that is so clouded in mystery by so many people. It's like, okay, it's accounting and it's taxes and my brain just shuts off. Right.
Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so here, but for real estate investing, since it's so powerful, I thought, this is something everyone needs to know about. And so I kind of just use my skills and try to teach as many people as possible through the mediums of podcasting and webinars and social media, et cetera. So it's been a fun ride.
Cool. Yeah. And definitely you've, like you said, have given back. And before we started recording, I actually, maybe foolishly accepted a LinkedIn challenge from you as well. As I mentioned, Yon is very active in LinkedIn and with this podcast and giving back to, other investors and like-minded individuals to, help grow their wealth, save in taxes. And with that being said, maybe we can just, start with, I gave a very high level overview of depreciation. I think most real estate investors are at least familiar with it or know, well, it saves me on taxes. Now, with that, what exactly is cost segregation?
It's a weird name, right? Okay. It's a weird name that the IRS gave for like an advanced form of depreciation. Essentially, what it means is segregating the cost of a property. Now, what does that mean? Okay. That as you described at the beginning, the introduction about depreciation, this great tax deduction that you get when you buy an investment property, instead of taking a little bit every single year, right? As you described, breaking down a few, even every month, but instead of taking a little bit spread out evenly over a 39-year period or 27.5-year period, you're able to break down that purchase price, that cost that you spent to buy the building into different individual components, meaning the structure really depreciates on a 39-year schedule, but there are things inside like the furniture or the fixtures or cabinets, carpeting, things that are non-structural that actually depreciate on a 5-year schedule, which means you can take the depreciation of the value of those assets, meaning take those bigger tax deductions at a much faster rate. Okay. So essentially, we're segregating that cost into these different categories, and we're able to take bigger tax deductions in the earlier years of ownership. That's in a nutshell what cost segregation is.
So kind of, back to my previous example, and obviously this is over the whole building, but say one component, if you will, was worth $300 a month on a traditional, I'm just going to use 27.5-year sliding scale. If that could be shortened to 5 years, that $300 would basically be expanded. Going to do my math quick on the spot, about $1,800 a month then, correct?
Correct. Exactly. Okay. So what we're able to do is take certain components. Like I said, it used to actually be called component depreciation, which makes a lot more sense because that's exactly what we're doing. We're saying, you have a multifamily property, let's say, and you have 20 units. So you have 20 cabinets, right? That are each 4 feet wide and et cetera, and cost, and the value of them is, let's say $450 each, right? So now we're able to add that up, right? And that's $9,000 right there of just cabinetry that now you can take as a faster tax deduction instead of just lumping it all together.
Gotcha. Okay. And so with this, cost segregation, accelerated depreciation, I know it's called a few other things in the industry. Is this relatively new in the investing world? Is this new in the tax code, or how long has this been around?
So cost segregation itself in the form that it's in has been around for about 40 years. There have been many changes over the years that have kind of, in fact, helped make it even better and more advantageous. For example, there are many court cases over the years, especially in the 80s and 90s, where you had certain large corporations, like a very famous one was Hospital Corporation of America, one of a huge corporation that was arguing that we should be able to take certain flooring to be able to depreciate it fast, because we need to replace the flooring every 5 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't just be treated as structural. And so they were able to bring that and find other individual components that met the standard for faster depreciation. And most recently, in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, was the, you know, the largest tax reform for, you know, the century, basically half a century. And it brought in a new law called 100% bonus depreciation, which has really been incredible for the industry, really, and for the real estate industry in general, because what it allows you to do, instead of taking those components over a relatively faster or 5 year or 7 year or 15 year schedule, things that depreciate on these faster schedules, 100% bonus depreciation allows you to have an option to take that all up front in the first year. So take like a huge lump sum of that depreciation up front. And that really changed the game for a lot of people that now, right, instead of having just lessening your tax burden, you could literally completely wipe it out and pay zero taxes.
All right. Well, if AOC or Elizabeth Warren is listening to this right now, they might have just had a stroke listening to that with the $0 tax bill. But if I can personally legally use the tax code to save on taxes, I'm all for that.
Exactly.
So now you had mentioned like the you had brought up like flooring and obviously the fixtures of the property. So could I just, you know, go into my property or go into a new purchase and, you know, go on Menards.com and like, well, okay, this cabinet's selling for $600. This fixture's selling for $300. This flooring is $1,000. Can I just do that on my own, tally up all the costs, write that up, and then send that to the IRS? Would that be sufficient?
It's not entirely as easy as one might think. So there is an entire section of the tax code, as you mentioned, that is dedicated to describing, you know, each individual component, right? Okay. And so you can take that, what's called the modified accelerated cost recovery system, right? That's the MACRS, M-A-C-R-S. And so you can go into that and exactly like you said and see, okay, well, let's look into that and see cabinets depreciated on a five-year schedule, right? And now I can find out, just like you said, well, how much is that? So, but that being said, you then need to go into what's called the conservation audit techniques guide, because there's a whole standard and methodology of how you actually have to make this conservation happen. It's not as easy as just figuring out what those values are and then taking out a depreciation schedule. Obviously, anything related to taxes, the IRS makes you jump through a lot of hoops.
Sure.
And you know, if you want to get these extra deductions, you actually have to do a lot of extra stuff, which essentially comes down to the fact that it's almost impossible to do it by yourself. You really need an engineering firm that specializes in this, because the IRS requires someone with construction engineering experience and to be able to determine what the values of those things are. Now, when you buy something, okay, let's say that you bought a property, right? And you, an existing, or you buy a single family, whatever it is, right? You buy a property. And then, you know, a year later, a few months later, whatever it is, after you've been renting it out, you decide, okay, I'd like to replace the refrigerator, for example, just one example. Now, when you go and buy that refrigerator, that new refrigerator, you know, you spend $1,000 on it, right? Mm-hmm. You can take that and depreciate that refrigerator. Okay. You don't need a cost segregation in order to do that, because it was purchased after the fact. It's going to be starting depreciating at a later schedule, right? Mm-hmm. The whole property starts depreciating on that 27 and a half or 39 year schedule the day you buy it, right?
Okay, yep.
The day you place it in service. But anything that comes in after the fact is going to be on its own separate schedule. That's very easy, right? To know you have a receipt for it, you can go add that to your depreciation schedule separately. Say, okay, the property, building, whatever. And then refrigerator, 5 year depreciation, boom, you got it. However, when you, and similarly with new construction, right? If you're building a property from new, you have the receipts, you have the invoices, you know exactly how much everything costs. You could theoretically, if you knew where everything, which category it fit into, you could depreciate all of those individual components on their respective schedules. However, the challenge and why conservation is so complicated and why it really cannot be done by itself is because most of the time we're talking about buying an existing property, right? Now, that existing building and everything that's in it, all the components that you buy as part of it, you don't know what the individual value of all of those things are within that and related to the purchase price that you bought it for, which is the craziest thing. Because depreciation, you would think, right? If you were making the law and it wasn't just completely arbitrary, right?
Right.
You would think I would, you know, if something like a roof needs to replace every 15 years, let's say, or 20 years, let's say, okay, the roof has a 20-year depreciable value, has a 20-year useful life. And therefore, if you buy a used property, you cannot go and depreciate that roof as if it were new.
Sure.
But that's the crazy thing about depreciation, because that's exactly what you can do.
Right.
If you buy a property for $1 million, and even though, you know, 75 years ago that property was built, and it cost $35,000 to build 70 years ago, but now you're getting to take the depreciation as if it were new.
Yep.
Right. Based that on that $1 million purchase price, starting right a 27.5 year schedule that allows you to take the tax write off of the value of that property. So that's the crazy thing.
Wow.
About depreciation.
Interesting. Well, leave it to the IRS to make things complicated. And then, of course, I'm sure the specialist at Madison Specs then would be able to help with that. And as I understand it, you are able to help clients in all 50 states. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. So Madison Specs, we're actually the largest national company specializing specifically in CoSec. We're not an accounting firm. So there are many like large accounting firms that actually do conservation in-house.
Okay.
But for the most part, 99% of accountants cannot do this, because even though it is, an accounting related, a tax related thing, it cannot be done by accountants. You still need the special training of the engineers and, and basically completing that report.
All right. Interesting. So with this, and, you know, if someone were to, you know, look at Madison Specs and possibly, you know, do a CoSec study, is there a particular instance or instances that this would maybe work the best, or, you know, maybe have the best bang for the buck, so to speak?
There are all types of property, basically any type of commercial or residential property for that matter, as long as it's an investment property. You cannot do this on your personal residence.
Okay.
Right. Question I get asked all the time, right? Cannot do it on your personal residence. However, you can do it on any single family or multifamily property, or commercial, right? We do office, industrial, warehouse, you name it, retail. Shopping centers, you name it, any type, golf courses, mobile home parks.
Oh, geez.
self storage. Yeah, you name it. We've done some crazy projects. But I'd say the most advantageous, really, so therefore, it's really for anyone. However, when it comes to like a dollar value, right, of when it's going to be beneficial, it generally speaking, I used to use like a rule of thumb about $500,000 purchase price. That's when it's like most beneficial. And over that, it's like a no-brainer basically. But some people have understood that to me, in that if they have a property worth under that or purchase for under that amount, it's not worth it. And that's not true. Okay. It can be worth it even on a smaller, you know, I would say if you go below, you know, sub $200,000 purchase price, it really doesn't, it starts not to make sense. Just because the amount that you have to shell out, you know, may cost a few thousand dollars to get the study done, and the tax benefits, the after tax benefits of those deductions are going to be, it's basically not going to outweigh it enough.
Right.
To make it make sense.
Nope. That makes sense. Okay. So yeah, with that, probably wouldn't be ideal for, you know, single family home, you know, $50,000 or even $100,000, probably not the best. Would there be a possibility of, you know, I myself own a number of single family homes across the US. Could you essentially bundle a CoSec study between multiple properties, or if that is applicable, how would that work?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's really not feasible to bundle properties together for a CoSec study unless they were bought as a portfolio to begin with. Because and maybe unless they were like all like in one built track or something like that, because what ends up happening is each property is depreciating. First of all, they're built separately. They have completely different builds. So each property needs to be looked at totally individually. And on top of that, if they were bought on different times and different prices, they're on their own separate depreciation schedule.
Okay.
And so it's very difficult to bundle things together at that point. Like I said, unless you're purchasing them as a portfolio, in which case you could Kind of lump bundle them together and do one conservation on the whole group.
Okay. That makes sense. So, and now I'm just kind of running the numbers through my head here. And obviously everyone's tax situation is a little bit different, but with this particular, you know, cost sake study, not only taking into account what's the value or purchase price of the property, would this generally be only applicable to real estate professionals, or could this, you know, still be beneficial to people that aren't a real estate professional by IRS designation?
So that's a really good question you ask. And maybe we should define what the real estate professional is, because it, you know, for someone listening and they don't really know what they're talking about. Like, I mean, it can be beneficial for a lot of people, but let's take a step back and explain why depreciation may be more beneficial to some people than others. As I like to put it, you know, in the words of George Orwell from Animal Farm, right? That all animals are created equal, but some are more equal than others, right?
You're right.
But to borrow that, paraphrase that all taxpayers are created equal, but some are more equal than others. So the real estate professionals actually get a much better, status when it comes to tax breaks. Sure. And I'll explain that in a second with what that means. But typically speaking, real estate rental income, is considered passive income. Now, from a tax perspective, it doesn't mean that it's actually passive, because anyone who owns real estate knows that there's very little passive, right, about it. you know, unless you're totally just writing a check as a limited partner in a syndication or something, where that's totally passive pretty much. But if you own real estate, it's active. However, the IRS treats it as what's called Schedule E rental income, which is passive income.
Sure.
Depreciation is a deduction that is used solely to offset, that passive income from Schedule E. Okay. And so what happens is, if you have, you know, your normal depreciation would be, let's say, $10,000 a year. And then, and your income is maybe $20,000 a year from your rentals. So then you get to offset that, right? Take that 10,000, knock it off the 20,000, and you're only paying taxes on the remaining 10,000. That's how depreciation works.
Right.
Free rental. However, if you do a conservation, you get a huge lump sum up front. Instead of that $10,000 deduction, you may get a $100,000 deduction.
Oh, wow.
But you only have a $20,000 income from your rentals. Mm-hmm. What happens to that extra $80,000? So first of all, the rental income is completely tax-free, right?
Sure.
You're not paying tax on that this year. And the extra $80,000, that creates what's called a passive loss. Now, you can't take it as a refund. You don't get a refund check from it. Mm-hmm. It creates a passive loss, which that passive loss either does one of two things. It either carries forward, which means that in the next year you can use it, you can't use it in the current year, or, and that's for most people, okay?
Sure.
And now is where we get into the real estate professionals. If you qualify as a real estate professional, which we'll define in a second, you actually are not limited to those passive losses, those depreciation deductions, just to offset your rental income. You can actually use it against any other income that you have, active income or W-2 income if your spouse is a W-2. Because if you have a W-2 job, essentially you cannot be a real estate professional also.
Right.
So that's the thing. But that's why they're treated much more unequally, if we want to say it that way.
Or more equal than others, as you said.
More equal than others, exactly. Because what happens is you end up taking these huge tax deductions, and instead of just being limited to use it against your rental income, you can now use it against any income or any active income you have. Mm-hmm. And especially if, like, you're a real estate broker or anything like that, it's a huge benefit to have rental properties, use the conservation, and then you get that. So to answer your original question, is this beneficial for people, even if they're not a real estate professional? Like I said, it's, you know, it can be, because it can help you if you have enough rental income that the depreciation itself, the conservation, can help to offset that. And so you're paying no taxes on your rental income. That itself is beneficial on occasion, right? If you have enough of that income. But if you don't, if you're not a real estate professional, you're just going to be limited to using those deductions against your rental income. It's going to be less beneficial. So, long answer, but
sure.
hope I cleared that up.
Right. And I'm sure, now I know you said, you know, Mass and Specs, you know, isn't an accounting firm, obviously, per se, but since you did mention that, you know, say an individual does have 80,000 or you know, let's just say $100,000 of suspended losses. And well, we can carry that forward. Well, I suppose in theory, then, you know, say fast forward 2022, 2023, whatever, then that particular year, the individual says, hey, I will qualify for a real estate professional status. And then that year, not only offset, you know, their spouse's W-2 per se, but then could use that suspended losses that were suspended from a prior year, correct?
So here's the thing. If you are a real estate professional, then the year that you claim those passive losses, and even if you have more passive losses that year, then they're suspended and you can use them in a future year. However, okay, if you are not a real estate professional, mm-hmm, those suspended passive losses can only be used against your other rental income in future years.
And okay,
even if in a later year, let's say this year, 2021, you get a big tax write-off, you're not a real estate professional and you take this huge $1 million tax deduction that you can't use, right? Sure. This passive loss just carries forward. And then next year, 2022, you are a real estate professional, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, those suspended passive losses cannot be used against active income, even though they could be in the year that you claim the real estate professional status. So it gets a little bit complicated when it comes to that.
Gotcha.
But the best thing is use the depreciation deductions if you need them.
Sure. Yeah. But, and probably the best advice there, just have a very good CPA or maybe even accounting team to help with everyone's tax situation. And for those maybe just listening for the first time, and I do plan on having a podcast on this later in the future. Real estate professional, essentially an individual has to have 750 hours or more in real estate related activities that they materially participate in. And that 750 hours has to be more than another job. Say they work part-time or a collection of jobs. They have three part-time jobs. Well, if those three part-time jobs equal to 800 hours and they did 750 hours of real estate activity, then that gets blown up because they have worked more hours that are non-real estate professional. So as you can guess, typically, if you have a full-time W-2 job, it is very difficult to qualify as a real estate professional. There are exceptions. I remember reading one story. There was a nurse that the IRS tax court said, there's no way you could be a real estate professional. Well, they looked at her books. She was very meticulous, thankfully, on her record keeping. Mm-hmm. And nights, weekends, holidays, days off, et cetera, they added up the hours. They're like, well, yeah, you're working 40 hours a week at your nursing job, but you're working whatever it was, 41 or 40 and a half hours as a real estate professional. So mm-hmm, she was able to verify it and won in tax court case. But
right,
I personally don't care to work 80 hours a week, but that's just me myself personally. So
yeah. And it's, I mean, I've had a few clients that have done the same thing, and it is very difficult because, again, if the IRS is going to audit you, they're going to look at everything. And unfortunately, right, the IRS audit agents are notoriously, and I hope they're not listening to this, but notoriously pretty dumb. and therefore, they may not understand how it's possible for you to work 40 hours on your rental property, mm-hmm, right? Well, especially if you have one. And to be honest, it's probably very difficult to spend 40 hours on your a week, right? Meaning more than your W-2 job.
I'm painting the living room with eyebrow liner or something like that. So it took me 40 hours to paint one wall. I don't know.
Exactly. So, you know, like you said, they are going to be very, you know, they're going to be looking at the books very, very carefully. And so you need to track your hours, et cetera, things like that. But do consult with a CPA, with someone who knows what they're talking about, who is real estate, you know, related, because you never want to get audited, number one. But if you do, you want to make sure that you win, right? So don't go into something. That's why I said it's very, very difficult to be, you know, have a W-2 job and also claim that real estate professional. Mm-hmm. However, having a spouse who's a real estate professional,
right,
or vice versa, is the best solution because at mm-hmm that point, then you can use the combined deductions against both of your income.
Right. And obviously married filing jointly that, but, and I'll just add in one tidbit. I think, you know, if anyone out there does get audited, I think Tom Wheelwright said it best. I will not talk to the IRS. Have your accountant talk to the IRS. Just, you know, give yourself a little bit distance from the agents and have your CPA or accounting firm deal with them. They are much more prepared and can answer questions than you are. Just like if you're, you know, doing your own defense at a court case, no, you want to hire a defense lawyer.
So. Exactly.
All right. Well, this has all been very interesting, and you kind of blew the wind out of my sails with the pulling carried losses. I was maybe looking for a tax loophole there. But now, are there any situations that, say, someone is listening to this and, well, gosh, I am a real estate professional. Or recently a professional, and I bought this building, I don't know, 5 years ago. My accountant never told me about this. I'm just doing a straight line depreciation and have for the last, whatever, 3, 4, 6 years. At that point, are they kind of, shall we say, screwed? Or is there something Madison Specs could, you know, essentially, I don't know, help redo their tax returns and take back some of those deductions, let's say?
Yeah. So the great thing is that even if in the way you described it, someone was taking regular straight line depreciation for many years, didn't know that they could do consolidation, you do not have to amend your tax returns.
Okay.
In order to take what we call a look back study, you can actually catch up whatever depreciation you missed that you could have taken in previous years without amending your tax returns. You basically get a lump sum in this year going forward by doing a consolidation now. Okay. And that's the way that's done is through filing a form called a 3115 form. And that allows you to just change the accounting method that you've been doing until now in a going forward motion. So again, do not require you to amend tax returns. That's never a good idea because that also opens you up to an audit sometimes.
Sure.
So, but yeah, that's the way to do it.
Okay. No, that makes sense. So, all right. Well, now that we've kind of covered all the basics, both for cost segregation and, you know, where it works best for, if there is someone listening to this that is interested in hearing more, or they're looking at, you know, gosh, I'm going to close on this whatever apartment building in 2022. And they know that, or they think cost segregation is going to work well for them. What's the best and easiest way to reach out to you and Madison Specs?
Best way. I mean, you can find me online, LinkedIn. That's the best way to connect with me. Definitely. As John mentioned in the introduction, that's I answer pretty quickly to my LinkedIn messages. So shoot me a message over there. Connect with me. You can also go to yonaweiss.com.
Okay.
You can go to madisonspecs.com. Also, that's our company's website. And yeah, just reach out. We have a service. We provide a free feasibility analysis for any property. So you can know ahead of time what the potential tax savings would be if you just wanted to do a cost segregation.
Okay, perfect. And again, as always, I'll be having all these links and the info in the show notes. So if you're listening to this while in the car or working out or walking the dogs, you don't have to rewind and find a piece of paper. And, you know, was that Yona Weiss with a W and IE or EI, or how was that spelled? So that will all be in the show notes for later use. So. Awesome. So with that, Yona, I just want to thank you again for your time and sharing your expertise and hopefully educating my listeners a little bit more. I myself have actually learned quite a bit, and I think I might have to have you on the show at a later time.
My pleasure. No, I appreciate you having me, and look forward to seeing you on the LinkedIn challenge.
Yes, I'll see what I got myself into there. So, well, thanks again, Yona, and take care.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.